In 2004, 19-year-old Gerard Conley sat in a sterile room at Love and Action, an ex-gay conversion therapy program in Memphis. His journal had been ripped apart, his possessions confiscated, and his very sense of self under systematic attack. The whitewashed building with its inverted red triangle logo, a heart cut out from its center, perfectly symbolized the program's philosophy: the removal of what they deemed sinful, the extraction of the heart itself. Upon arrival, Gerard received a 274-page handbook declaring in no uncertain terms, "You are not your own, but you have been bought for a price." This surrender of autonomy wasn't metaphorical. It was the foundation of everything that followed. When staff discovered his journal of short stories, they deemed it forbidden journaling and tore out the pages before his eyes, discarding his creative work like contraband. This moment of violation marked the beginning of a systematic attempt to deconstruct and rebuild his identity according to their fundamentalist blueprint. Every night at Love and Action, patients completed a moral inventory of past sins to share with their therapy group. This forced confession ritual served as a control mechanism, pushing participants to mine their pasts for shameful moments. Without distractions, Gerard had to confront what the program defined as his sinful nature, following a strict flowchart that pathologized sexuality. When patients exhausted real material, they began manufacturing confessions. "If I repent for sins I haven't even committed," one patient explained, "I figure God might even bump me up to step 5. This created an endless cycle. Patients could never be cured, as there was always more to confess. The program extended this framework through genograms, family trees marked with symbols for various sins. "It looks like you've got a lot of A on both sides," a fellow patient noted while examining Gerard's chart. "You must be really gay." Complex human experiences were reduced to simplistic cause and effect relationships. Love and Action operated on the premise that homosexuality was a set of behaviors to be unlearned through gender norms and religious principles. Their handbook warned against false images, from hypermasculinity to clothing choices that deviated from an authentic Christian identity. Cosby, an ex-alcoholic counselor with no experience of same-sex attraction, insisted sports were essential to proper masculinity. Jarrard endured sports documentaries meant to cure his deficiencies, wondering what it felt like to see yourself reflected in every movie, to not have to lie daily. When the program's lie chair exercise forced him to confront an imaginary father and he couldn't produce the expected anger, another patient's hostility provoked him to declare, "You're all completely crazy." This moment of resistance became his turning point, and he walked out despite warnings he'd never be cured. Gerard's path to Love and Action began after being outed by a student who had sexually assaulted him. His parents gave him an ultimatum: change or lose financial support. His mother was moved by a brochure showing a sad-eyed boy resembling her son. "I wanted to save the boy in that picture. I wanted to save you," she later confessed. For his father, a car dealer newly ordained as a minister, his son's sexuality represented both personal and professional failure. During his ordination, Gerard's father pledged to fight against the sin of homosexuality in the church, unaware his son was listening painfully from the congregation. Even before Love and Action, Gerard had internalized his community's shame, once jumping into a half-frozen campus lake as self-baptism and praying, "Lord, make me pure," while showering, desperate attempts at self-purification after years of being taught homosexuality was impure. At the core of Gerard's struggle was the seemingly irreconcilable conflict between religious faith and sexual identity. Raised in a missionary Baptist household where his father conducted daily Bible studies and looked for Armageddon signs, Gerard had internalized a worldview where salvation required strict adherence to biblical teachings, including those condemning homosexuality. This collision became evident during his friendship with David, who invited him to a Pentecostal service. The promise of such spiritual intimacy became everything to me in that moment, he reflects. This longing for spiritual connection paralleled his suppressed desire for human intimacy, creating a landscape where religious ecstasy and sexual desire became dangerously intertwined. The Love in Action counselors reduced homosexuality to a simple behavioral problem with spiritual causes, missing this complexity. When Garrod struggled with religious exercises, staff questioned his commitment. During one session, he pretended to agree while internally repeating "fuck God" whenever the words threatened to pull him back into self-loathing. 2 years after leaving Love in Action, Garrod heard John Smid admit on a podcast what he'd known all along. The transformation for the vast majority of homosexuals will not include a change of sexual orientation. This was the first of many public apologies from ex-gay counselors. Smid's memoir claiming to promote openness and honesty made Garrod shake with anger. In the decade following LIA, he struggled to rebuild his identity, connecting with other ex-gay survivors who shared similar stories of suicide attempts, mental health issues, and relationship difficulties. Most painfully, Garrod's relationship with God remained broken. "My therapists took him from me," he writes, describing a dead weight in my chest despite exploring different denominations. This spiritual trauma represents conversion therapy's most insidious aspect, destroying the very faith they claim to protect. The impact reached his family, too. A deacon barred Garrod's father from preaching because of his openly homosexual son. When Garrod finally called his father to say he must write this memoir to know who I am, his father responded tightly, "I just want you to be happy." The turning point in Garrod's experience came when he refused to participate in the program's manufactured narrative. After walking out and calling his mother, they drove home with Garrod feeling the familiar straitjacket tightening across my chest. When his mother saw him digging his fingernails into the dashboard, she pulled over and asked if he was going to kill himself. What emerged was an animal cry, a primal expression of suppressed pain. "We're stopping all of this now," she declared. By writing Boy Erased, Garrod reclaimed his narrative authority, transforming trauma into testimony. The memoir became a cultural touchstone that was adapted into film and praised for its exploration of identity and faith. Through writing, he transformed from victim to witness, using his experience to expose harmful practices while offering hope. His story proves that reclaiming one's narrative remains possible even after profound attempts to erase one's authentic self. Since publication, many states have banned conversion therapy for minors, and major ex-gay organizations have closed. John Smid eventually came out as gay, married a man, and renounced conversion therapy. By sharing his truth, Garrod helped create space for a more nuanced conversation about faith and sexuality that rejects the false choice between religious belief and authentic identity.